Hey, everybody. Thank you so much for your patience and waiting for us to return to the main feed. We are officially back. We've got tons of new episodes coming up for you in the new format. But if you've been jonesing to hear us talk about any cartoon related stuff over on our Patreon, Cartoons That Curse After Dark, we've been talking about tons of movies. We've talked about tons of franchises, popular ones, ones people like. Tariq, which ones have we been talking about?
Shrek, Toy Story, Paddington, Ted, Kung Fu Panda. The list goes on and on.
Gumby 1 even. And yeah. Look, some of our best stuff is on the Patreon. It's our worst kept secret or best kept secret. It's a well-kept secret. You guys should go check out our stuff over there. It's really great. Patreon.com/cartoonsthatcurse if you want a little bit of extra stuff. We've got like 35 episodes over there. Go check it out and cue the theme song.
Word.
I've been watching them for years. It's always been something that fit with all the animated characters that's doing their own bits. With a fry who's in the future and a family guy that sucks. With a father from a hill, a burger family runs amok. The show of spies is the same guy, except he totally say f***. End of verse.
Let's watch cartoons that curse.
Yeah, that's bananas.
That's rough.
What the f*** is up, everybody? Welcome to Cartoons That Curse. My name is Johnny. I'm here with my co-host, Tariq. And we have an amazing guest today, creator of Has Been Hotel and Hell of a Boss, Vivian Medrano, a.k.a. Vivzy Pop. How you doing, Vivian? Thanks for joining.
Yeah.
I'm doing great. Thanks so much for having me.
Yeah, no problem. We're really excited. Since we talk about adult animation and it's our, you know, it's called Cartoons That Curse, you kind of have the quintessential Cartoons That Curse out there right now.
Yes.
It's kind of a perfect fit.
A lot of cursing in my show.
A lot of cursing on the podcast, so it's fun.
That's true.
Good.
Sometimes, sometimes we get demonetized. Sometimes we have to reel it in a little bit. thanks so much for joining us. So obviously we talk about adult animation a lot on here, but we also just kind of go on tangents talking about stuff that we watch. So our first question for our guests is just, what are you watching right now? I know you're really busy and you're running two shows, but what are you watching if you have any time?
Oh man. Well, the honest answer is I've stumbled onto like, it's not even true crime, but it's like horrible like mountaineering accidents and stuff compilation videos. That's the honest answer. But in terms of like actual like shows and things, the latest thing that I binged through, which I'd already seen but I watched it again, was The Boys and Gen V. Nice. Which I really like. Even though I love adult animation, right now we haven't had like a new show lately. So I've been kind of more in the live action world, which I also really love. And sure. So that show was kind of like in the adult animation world of like how raunchy and how visceral and violent it is. You know, it's kind of similar to Invincible. So
right.
I really totally. Like that one. So that was the most recent thing that I was watching.
That's one that literally every single person in my life is begging me to watch, and I haven't.
Yeah,
watched
not
yet.
Same.
Oh, I highly recommend it. It's like not even just because it's also on Prime, which is also very fun. I'm very honored by that, but I'm a big fan of Seth Rogen's projects, and it's definitely something you can feel his touch on. It's really raunchy. It's got a ton of cursing, but it's also like very like visceral, and like it gets super gory and. But it's a really, it's got amazing characters, like phenomenal characters, mm-hmm. and some really, really like interesting themes. And obviously, like the take on superhero stuff is so, like it's really, it's done really well. Like obviously, it's like the what if superheroes were like an evil, like you know, corporate run entity.
Right.
But there's also like a lot of heart with like there are some that do genuinely want to be superheroes, and it's like this weird like. Cynical view of like what if kind of the wrong people got superpowers, but there's a lot of depth to all those characters, like even the really really bad ones. So it's just cool. It's just a cool show, so I highly recommend it.
Super I gotta fun. Check out. It almost sounds like it's got a little bit of a like Venture Bros flair, but like a little more realistic.
Yes.
Where it's yeah
mm. yeah it's Venture like Bros a grittier more much more R-rated, like a ton more fucks are thrown around. But and I think that's why I like it too, because it's definitely got that kind of cruder Seth Rogen humor in it, which is fun too. Like, it just gets really like, what the hell did we just fucking watch kind of thing. Totally. Which is fun to me. Like, I think it's great.
Yeah, I love the way he's kind of pivoted into producing and writing a lot of projects.
Just producing bangers. Like, just so good. Like, that's, I was already a fan of, like, you know, because I like his humor, I like his movies, but seeing like all the stuff since like that, all these things that he's touched, like Invincible and The Boys, and obviously it's a lot of other people too, but it's just cool that he's associated, you know, the recent Mutant Mayhem movie.
I was about to say, yeah, so
really, really good.
Yep. Yeah.
It's like awesome. So he's got a good track record. So I respect the hell out of the guy. He's awesome.
Yeah, I think Mutant Mayhem was like Tariq's favorite movie last year.
That was my roommate's, but I love that thing.
It's up there. I thought it was really good. Like, I was like, you know, nothing could really top Spider-Verse for a while. And then that one came out. It was just so fun. And it had such a similar vibe of just like, this is better than it should have been, you know. It's like so good
for real. I just kept thinking, if I were a kid when that movie came out, I would have been my favorite thing in the world.
That's what
like,
I said
exactly been,
like I'm more into like sitcoms and comedy, but like all the cool cartoon movies that the kids are getting now, I would have been a different beast by the time I was an adult.
So you brought up adult animation, and obviously we talk about that a lot here, and we're going to talk about BoJack today, which we're stoked to do because BoJack is like my favorite show, one of Tariq's favorite show, and it's one that we've never talked about on the pod. So like, this is going to be, it's going to, where there's, we got like plenty that we want to dive into. But
wait, is this how I'm finding out? This is how I'm finding out that you think it's one of my favorite shows and not my favorite show?
Oh, is it your favorite?
Show?
Is it your number one? I didn't want to speak fully for you.
It's so cool seeing how many people it's like the favorite show, because it's mine as well. It's my favorite series of all time. It's just incredible, but it's also not one that has like a big fandom or a big, you know, like it just kind of exists as this awesome gem of a like masterpiece kind of animated series, you know.
Yeah, it's awesome. Totally. It's got like a very dedicated fan base, but they're not like massive. Like it's definitely my favorite. Do you have any other adult animated series that are your favorites? Are there some, are there ones that you grew up on that sort of like helped influence your taste?
Absolutely. Yeah. The big one I cite is South Park. I still love South Park. It's like, it's become like a weird comfort show because like, even though I've kind of fallen off following it as dedicated, you know, I've seen everything. I think the only thing I haven't seen, there's been some new specials that I haven't quite caught because they're kind of all over the streaming sites. And I'm just like, I can't quite keep up. But but like that show, like, is like the one that like was so like, I could just pick up any of those like kind of classic like seasons where I was like developing and just watch them and just know them by heart. And for me, that was the show that turned me into a fan of adult animation because I was weirdly sheltered from it. I was very like self avoidant of things on the internet. It's really funny because like the internet, when I was, you know, I grew up with it like becoming a thing, right? So like when I was in like middle school, high school, I would see or maybe more so middle school, I would see like raunchy art by accident of like characters I loved from like Pokemon or like the shows I'd watch, and I was like, no, that's horrible, like I can't look at that. And so I like avoided anything like too raunchy. Like, it was also like the time of like Albino Black Sheep was the website, or like E-Bombs World, you know, like those kind of websites, you know, like, do you remember those? Like, so I like remember also like seeing things like that. Oh, there she goes. seeing things like that and being like very like worried it was too raunchy or like everything like that. And so South Park, I remember watching it with a friend at like a friend's sleepover because she just, you know, she had an older sister. So we would watch like the more adult things, like, you know, with her there. And I saw the episode called, I think it's called Canceled, where they go to like the aliens we find out that Earth is a TV show. And I don't know why, but I thought it was the funniest thing I'd ever seen in like my life. And so I used to, my parents were very like, or at least my mom was very like, didn't want us to watch certain things. And so I had a video iPod and I would like put I would download from iTunes as many episodes of South Park as I could afford on like a $15 gift card, and then like transfer them, take them up to my like computer up in my room and put them on my video iPod, and then like watch them like a drug addict. So
that's so funny.
Yeah, South Park's very special to me in that way. Like, it was like my gateway drug to adult animation. And since then, I mean, I really like American Dad. I think American Dad is really underrated. Mm-hmm. Like, it's actually really funny and has really good characters. And it's kind of more in the sitcom. So that one kind of scratches like that sitcom itch for totally. Me in the adult animation space, the primetime space. I think that's my favorite of the primetime ones. Recently, I kind of became like a born again Simpsons fan because I hadn't really watched that show, but I love it and I love the characters. So I was very late to the game on that one. And then Futurama, I think, is a classic. Yeah. You know, I love that one.
You're speaking our language. These are all our faves.
Yeah, you're checking them all.
Yeah, yeah. It's because they're good. Yeah, it's because they're really amazing shows. And like, I feel like I'm missing some because I feel like there are some really like kind of not as talked about animated, like adult animated shows, but those are the ones that I think had the biggest influence. So I just have to cite them. But then, you know, BoJack was the one that changed kind of the game in terms of what adult animation could be. So, or at least to me. So that one ended up being extra special in that way.
Yeah. That's so funny that you, because I also used to watch South Park episodes on my video iPod, and I would download sound clips off like LimeWire and like just like the songs and clips from the show, and I would just put them in their own like South Park audio track and listen to them. I would listen to the anime song from Good Times with Weapons all the time.
Yeah, let's fight in love.
That's so funny.
That's so great. Okay.
So now I don't know if you've done many interviews since Has-Been has come out, but how do you feel now that season one is like out there in the world? Like, I know you're working on it for years. Is it weird that it's like available and people are talking about it, or like, how do you feel?
It feels great because it was like 2 years of production, and then, you know, the series was originally going to come out in the summer of last year, and then for very valid reason, because it was because Amazon kind of entered the game and kind of swooped the show up and stuff and greenlit the second season and everything, like kind of and they needed, which is amazing. Like, my favorite part about the series, like, this was something I didn't have any involvement with, but I love it, is that it got dubbed and like, you know, like translated into like ton of languages. So that was actually why it didn't come out in the summer anymore, was because you know, once it got, you know, picked up, it could be properly localized, which I thought was amazing. I think it makes the show so much more accessible and obviously like so much more like, you know, it's become a hit in other, like many other countries. So it's really like, I think that was absolutely necessary, but that's one of the reasons why it was kind of like we had it done, but it then had to go through this whole other process and then got a proper release. And so it was a lot of like kind of almost like, you know, we'd had it done. So it was kind of like, yay, that season exists, but nobody's seen it yet. But we've seen it like a million times. So we don't, you know, like, I kind of already knew all the jokes, all the songs, everything like so intimately. And so it was really like kind of almost a lot of anxiety from like, oh my gosh, like people have been waiting so long for this show. I really hope it lives up to, you know, what people want it to be. And, you know, and there was a lot of anxiety because it also, you know, at 8 episodes at 22 minute runtime, it's a very brisk, very tight story. So to me, it runs more like a movie, almost like a really long movie or like a musical, you know. It's like a three hour long runtime of like the whole season. So, you know, I was very like, oh God, you know, like there was a lot of like apprehension, I guess, or like anxiety of just like, I hope people like this, because we put like absolutely everything into it. And I was very, very proud of it. And I felt like it delivered on a lot of things based on the pilot originally and all these other things. So, but you have no idea, right? And it's just sitting there, right? It's just been sitting done. And we're kind of already starting to like move into the next season, and, you know, everything was kind of moving forward. So when it came out, it was like this really surreal burst of like an explosion, which happened similarly with the pilot, but with that, it was very like natural. It was just like, hey, we're putting this out. And then it just happened, where this was like, there was an expectation and a, like a, I hope, you know, it's good enough, right? Yeah, and then when it exploded again, I was like, yay, it worked. Yay, we did it, you know? So it feels great. It feels amazing. I'm so honored that people are enjoying it. I'm so honored that people like these characters and the songs especially. I mean, I knew as soon as I was hearing the demos come through that the soundtrack would be very popular. Yeah. So seems like I can't take credit up for the
internet. Yeah. It's going nuts.
Yeah. I'm very proud. I'm very honored by my songwriting team of Sam and Andrew. They're insanely talented. They did those songs in such record time that it's incredible that they're as banger as they are, honestly. So it's awesome. So
you mentioned that when Amazon picked it up that you started doing all the, so was the show originally not going to be on Amazon Prime and then they came in and localized it and put it on their platform?
Yeah, well, originally it was A24 that greenlit the show, and I'm very, very honored by them because, you know, there was a lot of interest in the show, like a lot of interest in the show from like all the big major networks, but the issue was more so, I think that has been, it is initially, especially based off the pilot, is kind of hard to put in a box. You know, it's it's so different from what exists out there. And I think there was a lot of the conversations were more about developing the show to fit in a certain like way or something like that. And they're, what I love about A24 is they kind of went, let's try to just do it and see what happens there. So the original plan was, they were going to maybe find a way to distribute it themselves, or there's going to be some kind of more indie route for it. But they were the ones that kind of took the plunge with me and greenlit the first season. And then later down the line, when more of the show was done and you could see what, you know, was happening, Amazon came in, and they came in just as strong as A24 did, with a lot of faith and a lot of love for the show. And so then it ended up with them. So it was just a little untraditional in the way it started, but like ended up in like, in my opinion, a very good home. So it worked out, but I'm very thankful to A24 for doing that plunge instead of it going into like a potential development and maybe changing from what I wanted it to be. Cause that I think was the biggest concern.
Amazing. And then you're running two shows. That's
it's gotta be so much.
No, it's great. I mean, I'm a workaholic by nature, so I really like working, you know, constantly. And I love both these stories. I love both these it's a shared universe, which also like keeps me like inventing and making sure things work technically between the two things, but the stories and the stakes between the two series are so different that it feels like one's a vacation from the other. You know, when I want something really, really big and dramatic where I'm like, oh gosh, characters go through these big, like massive themes and changes. Whereas in Hell of a, it's much more intimate. It's much more realistic. It's kind of like a soap opera in a way, and a workplace comedy. And it has to do with class systems and flawed, like dysfunctional relationships and people, you know. It's much more centered around that, which I think is really fun. So yeah, they're kind of two sides of a very, you know, two very different sides of a coin, I guess.
I was really curious because I remember hearing like Seth MacFarlane, for example, we talked about American Dad and how he pitched, the only reason he pitched American Dad was because they canceled Family Guy. And then they brought Family Guy back literally around the same time. And then he had to like run back and forth between both offices. And I was wondering, like, was it always the plan to do two at the same time? Or did you just kind of like fall into doing that?
I kind of fell into it because what happened was I'm kind of a creative shark. I just have to be working on something or else, like, you know, I'll just literally die. And so for me, it was that when Hasbin entered this stage of finding, you know, like we going to producers, working, you know, finding its home with A24 and then, you know, figuring out where it would go from there and, you know, pitching it and doing all kind of the traditional industry things. It, you know, we couldn't work on more. So I was kind of like, thankfully, Hell of a kind of came at the perfect time. I'm very indebted to Brandon, who helped me like start that project and voices the main character, because it was his faith in it that, like, you know, he was just like a lot of generals that I had with for development of other projects. Like, they kind of, development takes a long time and those conversations take a long time. And so I kind of had expected it to be like a lot of the other generals I'd go on where it, you know, that it doesn't actually manifest. Whereas when I met with Brandon, like, hey, I have this, this project that's like kind of similar to the one I'm currently making. It, the Hasbin pilot hadn't come out yet when I met with him. But I was like, I think you'd be kind of perfect for this world and for these, this character. And he was like, oh yeah, like I'm free on like Sundays and like pretty much every day except for like Wednesday, but like Sundays are my best day. And I was like, wait, like we can, like, you want to, he was like, yeah, we can start, right? Like, yeah, let's just do it. Wow. And I was like, okay. And so, yeah. And so we ended up writing the pilot really during, you know, the later half of making the Hasbin pilot. And it just so happened that there was a ton of artists that had just left a studio in Mexico, and they all came to me kind of en masse, and they were like, hey, like, we really need work. We'd love to work on your pilot. That was the Hasbin pilot at the time. And yeah. I was kind of like, well, we already have enough people on that pilot, like, but yeah. I have this other thing. And so almost all those people came over and worked on the Hell of a pilot at the same time as the Hasbin pilot. And that's why Hell of a pilot came out not that long after the Hasbin pilot, because it just kind of, everything was very faded. It's felt yeah. like a very faded show. And if it wasn't for Hell of a, Hasbin wouldn't be nearly as strong, because I found so many artists through working on that first season of Hell of a that right. then jumped onto Hasbin and already knew the style, already knew the vibe. I was comfortable working with them. So it, like, the shows have helped each other in so many ways. Like, they really are so sibling. And Hell of a also, like, just helped me, I think, develop my writing skills in general, because I learned so much writing that first season and writing the second season. And Hasbin came after we'd finished writing the second season of Hell of a. So I had oh, wow. two full seasons of like writing under my belt before writing on Hasbin. Mm. So I just feel like it was just kind of perfect that they were, and thankfully one was more heavily in production while the other was like first season of Hell of a was already kind of done by the time Hasbin really wrapped up. And so season right. two was kind of the balance season. And we're still learning how to balance, you know, right. because a lot of the crews are consist of similar or the same people. So we have to like really discipline, like who's working on which project at what time and, you know, things like that. And for me, my role's kind of become more of a oversight role entirely, because I can't be as hands-on on either project without it causing delays in some way. So sure. yeah, it's been a challenge to have two full projects like running, but at least one of them is it being handled by another company. So there is an element of like, you know, it's not both things at Spindle Horse, thankfully. Like Spindle Horse is heavily involved with both shows, but it's a little bit more manageable.
Totally. So. Right. Yeah. And I mean, it also just feels like the, like sort of the different release models, like you having Hell of a come out, you know, every month or two for this time in between even the Hasbin pilot and the Hasbin release, it feels like that's built hype for the world and for even just for Hasbin coming out. It feels like Hasbin had more hype leading into the first season than like you could have even hoped for after after the pilot. Yeah. I mean, especially after all the time, you know. It's yeah, it seems like it's all very, very fortuitous in how it all came together.
Right.
So one other question we were talking about shows like we talk about show, we love The Simpsons. Tariq is like the biggest Family Guy fan in the world. We like we're big fans of those like kind of sitcom shows. And there we were talking about how interesting the difference in stuff like that is, where The Simpsons is a show that's created by someone and then is largely passed off to other creatives who like it, there's different showrunners every couple of years, except for those 20 years that Al Jean showed. Yeah. But largely in the early days, they were changing showrunners. You know, Family Guy has different showrunners. And, you know, that's very different than stuff like Hasbin or Hell of a or BoJack, which are very creator driven. Is that the world you're interested in? Is the world of something like The Simpsons or Family Guy where you create an idea and pass it off to other people of interest to you? Or are you someone who like really needs the hands-on authorship of something?
I feel like as of this second, very hands-on, like all the stories, because I think that's the thing about me is that I've tried to challenge myself to come up with something like The Simpsons or like Family Guy that's episodic and that mm-hmm. has some development, but it has to return to the status quo at the end of the day. And funny enough, Hell of a Boss was sort of that at the beginning, but I've found that I just can't do it easily. It's I'm kind of just a storyteller by nature. I like seeing development of characters I like and I, you know, enjoy. So I kind of fell into, I think, at least right now, the worlds and stories that I'm making right now are very much stories. So they're very, yeah, hands-on. I have a vision. I know exactly where both shows end. Cool. I know where they could continue and there could be spinoffs and there could be more expansion of the story, but I know where like the main, like for example, you know, Blitz and Helva and Charlie and Has-Been, like I know where their stories end and I know where the, cool. a lot of the other character stories end. And, because of that, I want to see them through, you know, and I think that's just kind of how I am as a creator and how I found, because even when I challenge myself to try to make something that's a little bit more episodic, I just find myself not being as interested in that. Mm. What's nice about Helva, though, is that we are like, I don't want to reveal kind of something we have in the works, but we do have a way of exploring the episodicness of Helva in kind of a different way, which I'm very cool. excited for. It's going to be somewhat outside of the main series, but just because that was one that was created initially to be a little bit more episodic, we thought it would sure. be fun to explore that side of it, kind of their job and the missions and stuff they go on. But for Has-Been, that one was always a straight story. And so someday I'd love to like explore what like just a fun cast of characters and them just doing things would be. But I think right. naturally that's like harder for like that would be like a sure. challenge for me. So someday it might happen. But I do enjoy it. Like it's a very comfort kind of thing. Like South Park's like that.
Yeah.
American Dad's like that. And Simpsons mm-hmm. is like that. But even within those shows, the things I enjoy the most are like the little tiny nuggets of like change that happened, yeah. you know,
yes.
to the characters.
Yeah. South Park especially has been embracing that in the more, you know, in the last 6 or 7 years or so. Mm-hmm. And it's yeah. been so interesting to see them sort of change. And that's an interesting one because it is this sort of episodic sitcom-y show, but it has been those two guys the whole time. Yeah, and that's like unheard time. Of.
Yeah.
It's like unheard of so for that more kind like, of show.
It's more like what they, like they've been doing it for so long that they're probably just like, how do we keep it interesting for ourselves? You know, because that's the other, yeah. the other thing, the other risk I think creators reach is when a franchise kind of outlives them and they want to do different things, which like to yes. me, like obviously I want to see the Has-Been story through, but like, you know, if there's a world where there's more after that, that might be the time where I'm like, you know what, maybe a new voice could mm-hmm. be interesting in this unit, you know what I mean? But that's obviously yeah. like far off. Who that's knows if that will even yeah. happen. But like that's where I could see like passing a baton is if a new story is kind of birthed in a universe. And if there's cool. enough information about the universe and how it works that, you know, I wouldn't have to be the one like kind of overseeing everything. But that's what's cool about having like a universe that's really big is I feel like you can bring other people into it and kind of have other voices inside of it, which is fun.
Totally amazing. Before we talk about BoJack, I do want to talk about the Broadway inspirations just with the musical aspect of Has-Been. Mm-hmm. So like we watching through the first season, I was talking to some friends and they were, and I think you kind of touched on this a little bit, but it almost feels like the whole season is like structured like a music, like a Broadway musical, like same mm-hmm. number, same, like right around the same number of songs as a musical will have, mm-hmm. Like about the same length that right. a musical
yeah.
is.
Yeah.
Was that like, was that intentional or was that something that just kind of happened as you made it? Or is that, yeah. Was that the inspiration?
That was kind of natural because, you know, like I said earlier, like we kind of had this set season of 8 episodes at 22 minutes and that's, you know, yeah, like it amounts to about the size of a musical minus the intermission.
Right.
So it like, or I guess like with no intermission, but stuff in the intermission sure. time. Mm-hmm. But what's cool about it is that it kind of worked out that way because I do feel like there's a two-act kind of vibe of it, where we get to, like, the first half of the season had to set up so much, like, that was going to be paid off in the second half. Like, that was kind of the challenge was, you know, because I remember seeing early on, especially with people talking about, like, some of these reveals and stuff. It's like, oh, why was this revealed in the first episode versus, you know, and I was like, well, because we have to pay it off, yeah. You know, in the fifth episode or the, you know what I mean? Like it was very structured. Like we did look at the whole season of scripts and look really, really sharply on it and make sure like everything, except for the mysteries we did want to continue because we did want some lingering questions and things like that. But we wanted to make sure all the things set up particularly for this season to like, have enough space between them that would feel somewhat comfortable. Like it wasn't like back to back to back kind of thing, but you know, that was a challenge and it was really, I think we kind of did have to lay it out as almost like a two act kind of thing, almost like a musical. And then sure. When it came to the songs, like I remember early on, there wasn't an expectancy for the songs to be as hefty as they were. And that was kind of a challenge for me because I was like, I want these songs to be like real songs. Like I want them to, did not, because in the pilot we had songs that were really like I think the Inside of Every Demon is a Rainbow is like only like a minute or so, and then the reprise is only like 30 seconds or so. So it's like very, very short. And there was an expectancy of that, like, oh yeah, the songs are gonna be like a minute or something, right? And I was like, no, we're gonna have real songs. Like that's you know, I think we should have real songs. And I think that paid off because it was finding, there was a lot of work between me and the songwriters to make sure that. And like you, like what will the songs cover? How much of the script will they cover? You know, how, you know, it was a very, very like interesting game of like making sure that like this is what the script is going to say. This is what the songs are going to say. Mm. The songs are 3 minutes. So that means that the script has to be like X amount. You know what I mean? Like it was a challenge, but it was really fun to like work really closely with the song team and like really make sure all those songs like hit a very specific purpose in the episode. So, and I think in that way it was very Broadway because I think that's I've never been a part of a Broadway show, but I assume it's similar where like, you know, you kind of have the story or the movie or like whatever kind of the basis of it is, and then you have to like pinpoint which moments are the songs, which scenes are going to be like you know, told in song form,
right?
You can't totally just cause things to pop up on my window. But it was super fun. And obviously the voice cast being so much from the Broadway world just, I think, lended to how much more Broadway it felt in the overall final.
Are you a big Broadway fan? Do you see a lot of Broadway shows?
Yes, I do. I'm a big Broadway fan. I've been a big Broadway fan since middle school, since like I started listening to these soundtracks. I was someone like, I think my gateway drug. I love Annie. That was the one I was in elementary school. So I think that was like my initial like love for theater came from like being in a show because it was like a mandatory thing in our school, like to be in the musical. And of course it was Annie because it's always Annie. And then in high school and on, I fell in love with like the soundtracks of like Chicago and Wicked and Little Shop of Horrors and everything like that. And then once I could actually afford going to see shows, I see as many as possible. So now I have like two massive binders full of playbills that I've seen of shows. And I try to see things because they close really fast nowadays, you know, a show like keeping a show alive on Broadway is a feat in itself. So I try to see as many as possible because you'd be amazed how many gems are just completely lost to time. Even really popular ones like the Beetlejuice musical was a huge hit.
Yeah, and it's gone.
And it thankfully got like a revival, but it you know still ended up closing. And I'm like, it's such a good show, and not everyone could see. You know, I also wish there was more pro shots. I know why there aren't, but
same.
It would be nice to make Broadway more accessible.
Yeah, because it's always nice
to share.
And it's in one place and it's right. kind of expensive for some people. I do wish they would, at least, you know, if a show's kind of going off, do a pro shot. I'm in the process of plotting a move to New York, and I know I'm going to become such a Broadway bitch. Like I'm just going to be watching. Yes. So I've visited a couple times over the last couple of years, and I've seen like I think I've gone to 6 shows just in those like 2 trips. But the thing that's like breaking my brain and my sort of hyper fixated brain is the idea that like I could see a show I love with equally great different casts all the time.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I've seen Hadestown like 6 times because I'm like, I want to see these new people and I want to see these people. And I'm like, which is a little dangerous for my wallet, but
yeah. But it's such a rewarding experience. Like, cause yeah, like so you, what's nice, the magic of live theater is that every single time you see it, you're seeing something different. Like you are seeing a different decision from the actor, even if it's the same actor before. Like I had the pleasure of seeing Beetlejuice a couple times and like Alex would almost always do something different and Leslie would almost always do something different. And it was so fun, especially seeing like, you know, the show like normal when I first saw it to seeing, I got to see the closing and like the amount of like extra and like love and fun that the actors put into that final performance was like so amazing to see. And I've gotten to see a couple closing shows and I love the energy. Like obviously it's a bittersweet energy because they're like performing these songs for the final time and there's always like a lot, like I've seen the actors like kind of break and cry when they wouldn't normally and things like that, and it's just so amazing to like kind of be like I'm witnessing the final time that this incredible show is getting put on and these actors are feeling that in real time. And like, it's just so cool, you know, because that versus like an opening night is like completely different performances, a completely different energy. And then, or just like a normal, like a matinee versus a nighttime. Like there's so much variety and knowing people on Broadway now and getting to know them and talking. Because I've asked them questions about, I'm like, what's it like? You know, I know my friend Don Daryl Rivera, who voices, he's Wally Wackford in Hell of a Boss. And he's a couple voices in Has-Been. He voices like the porn director Travis and stuff like that. Nice. Love working with him. He's been Iago in Aladdin on Broadway for like since it started, like since it opened. Wow. So a very, very long time. And I asked him, I was like, do you just have it? He's like, oh yeah, like I have it. It's like on autopilot. I know the show so well. I know it so well that I'm just like, just doing it. But what's fun is that he always, like, he's a show stealer every time. He's so animated and he like does a lot of pratfalls and things like in the show, and I'm like, it's so cool that he's like, he knows the show so intimately, like muscle memory, but also he brings something fun and new to it every time. And I think that's so cool. Like that's what's cool about live theater is it's real people doing it. So
yeah,
do you have an interest in adapting Has-Been for the stage?
Oh, I'd love to. It's funny. I didn't initially. I'd love to be involved with a musical of any kind. So whether it be Has-Been or something new or original or someone else's or something like that, I just want to be in that world at some point. But it's never been said more by people who have more ability to do it than me, you know? Right. So it's not out of the realm of possibility, I don't think, if the show continues to be successful.
I just imagine like even just like the costumes and the characters and the world, how cool those sets could be on a stage. Like
it'd be so cool. It'd be a very gaudy. I've seen like shows like Moulin Rouge and things that have these like really extravagant sets with lots of red on them, and I'm like that it could totally be done.
I was gonna say, imagining just the big Has-Been hotel lights on top of the hotel, like on the stage would be so cool.
It'd be the coolest thing ever. Like I would literally cry so hard if I ever saw that. I cried really hard when I saw the billboard in Times Square, and that was its own adventure. It was extra funny too, because it's fun fact, because I know a lot of people are commenting, they're like, it's like you're seeing it for the first time every single time. And I'm like, that's because it was in rotation every like 15 to 20 minutes, and it only lasted about 15 seconds. So it was like seeing it the first time. We were like, go, 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 there it is, it's there. You know, because it was also really, really cold. So we were like dying, and then we're like, okay, it's there. Like, all right, like video, picture. Like it was the coolest thing ever. Oh. But it was like, it was definitely an adventure with how cold it was.
Amazing. Well, thank you so much for talking to us about all this stuff. We've just been like, I mean, Tariq and I have been watching the show we're watching it week to week, and we're kind of geeking mm-hmm. out about a lot of it. Like, we're just happy to be able to ask you so many yeah. questions about it. Yeah.
Thank you. No, I appreciate it. I'm so glad you enjoyed it. It's been the greatest honor ever seeing people enjoy it and people theorizing and people like, yeah. you know, cause that's what I love about making stories and telling, and especially the characters aspect. Like, I love these characters, and it was one of those things that I'm very honored that people love them as much as they do, because I know that the story had to kind of go, you know, we had to tell sure. the story. So there wasn't as many moments with these characters, I think, you know, just being together that I would have wanted. But I mm-hmm. really love that we were able to characterize them in a way that still makes their personalities and their relationships with each other clear. So that I'm very happy that people still enjoy the characters, like, interacting and having fun together. It just, yeah. I don't know. Means a lot to me.
I had so much fun theorizing and talking about it, but it was funny because, you know, not being as in tune with everything since the pilot came out, and the fandom is just so, like, they're so ravenous for every piece of information, and it was so cool to see, but also just like, I watch the show and I'm like, here's an idea, and I write it down, and then I have comments that are like, actually, in this Q&A 3 years ago, they said this.
Well, that's the other thing too I feel bad about, is I feel like the problem with being a creator who's existed and developed these characters on the internet my whole, because, you know, I've been on the internet, I went from DeviantArt to Tumblr to Twitter yeah. mm-hmm. to YouTube, you know, so there is a lot of information and not all of it's accurate. And then right. people go, you know, because a lot of it's changed. And so my yeah. attitude is always like, whatever I say, whatever the show says, whatever Helluva says, whatever right. Hasbin says, and then whatever maybe we say in like, I don't even know. I don't even trust what I say in Q&As to this day. You know, I try to like preface it with like, I can't convert. Like, I think recently I was asked on a live stream, the one we did with the cast just recently. It was like, what's everybody's birthdays? And I'm like, I can't fucking confirm that, dude. I'm going to change it. It's going to somehow cause a problem, because I used to try, like, I used to be like, well, I guess it's this or whatever. And then people go, okay, add that to the wiki. And like, the wiki yeah. is the most inaccurate thing in the world. I'll say that. So
we got everything on it.
Yeah. Cause it has everything. And then it also has like things that literally are made up. I've seen right. it. I've seen like literally okay. like, this character doesn't exist, or like, oh, one time Viv, or like Viv's friend said this on a podcast once. And I'm like, what? Okay. Like,
yeah.
Viv's sister said this, you know? And I'm like,
yeah.
Okay. That's not.
We're going to get a whole new wiki entry just from this podcast episode.
Exactly. Right. Yeah. There's going to be the entry that's like, Viv says the wiki isn't accurate at all. And don't.
Yeah. There's going to be a wiki entry about the wiki's inaccuracy.
To be fair to whoever's running the wiki, I'm sure it's hard to keep up with all this information and outdated impossible. Information, all this stuff. But I feel like it should just be what's in the show. Like, just stick to sure. that. Stick to what's sure. in the show, and you've got right. the best chance at something accurate, right?
Totally. So. Totally.
This is just cool. This sorry, is a ahead, ploy Jay. For it was just a ploy for Johnny to find out that he was right all along.
I told you guys. amazing. Okay, cool. Well, let's get talking about BoJack. Sorry, we talked for like 40 minutes about Hasbin, but we're here to geek out about BoJack, because we know you, as you mentioned, it's your favorite show. So I guess, I mean, you touched on it a little bit, but the first thing I want to ask you is, why is BoJack your favorite adult animated show?
I love that question. it's like, when BoJack came out, I was developing Hasbin, and I was like wanting to make it. And there was an element, because Hasbin originally, the concept was much more episodically broad. Like, it was very like, here's some weird, wacky characters. I wanted to put them in one place and have them. They're all from different periods of history. And so it had more of like a weird, like, yeah, like sitcom-y, like American Dad, or even like Drawn Together kind of influence, where it was just raunch and weird characters stuck together who don't really like each other and like a lot and have to like deal with that. That was like the initial concept, when I was just kind of taking characters from all over my you know, roster of characters, because I have made many characters in my day, and so they've kind of come from all over. Like, Alistair I had a really long time ago, Angel came more in high school, Charlie came more in college, you know, so it was kind of all over. And when BoJack came out, it was during this time where I didn't really know what I wanted the show to be. And I was kind of trying to put it in a box. And when BoJack came out, it was the storyline, you know, because it starts a little in that
in a box
adult animation right. world. Yeah. But then pretty fast, it gets out of that box and starts being its own thing. And I was like, wait, you can have an adult animated show that like kind of has this really intense, because it's not just that it starts telling a story, because I feel like it's not the first one to do that, but it is the first to do a story to me that challenges what it's like to like this main character is so deeply flawed and like challenges like a traditional storyline of like how you're supposed to feel at the end. Like it's not happy and it's not, it doesn't have easy answers and it has these big, broad questions. And to me, that was kind of like a huge like wake up of like, wait, I don't have to shove my story into a box for it to be an animated show, you know? And that kind of, you know, between that and other like musical, because there's also been a lot of musical theater recently, like musical shows that, like on Broadway that are more in the adult space and tell really challenging, really like sometimes upsetting, sometimes really dark and like kind of messed up stories. Like for example, Dear Evan Hansen also was kind of new around the time. And that's a really complicated story and a very like kind of fucked up main character. You know, things like Book of Mormon, that was like a comedy, but it was like a, you know, it was like South Park humor and everything. So like all these things kind of that were innovating what adult media can be came around like the perfect time for me to be like, you know what, I can tell a story and it can be a musical and I can do this. So I cite BoJack as like really the show that came at like the perfect time for me to do what I actually wanted to do instead of what I thought I had to do with Hasbin. And just in general, as BoJack came out, it became this like incredible, like it just, it's such a good story because the first season is good, but the second season, especially like, the way it ends is like, holy shit. Yeah. Like you just jaw drop, like, oh my God, this is the main character.
Yeah.
You know, we're watching and I, one of my co-writers, I like made him watch the show and that was the point where he was like, what the fuck? Like, oh my. And it, and that's what sold him on the show was that, was the Escape from LA, that Escape episode. So and it's good. Like, it's so good. It's such, that's a brilliant episode of television. And I'm like, I think once that happened, I was like, okay, BoJack is different. Like it is, this is a show that I, and also just like semi being like, I wasn't as in the industry as I am now, but knowing kind of like how hard that must have been to like pitch and like, pull off is like amazing. Like I'm insanely in awe of what they were able to tell and accomplish in that show. And obviously it just continued on. I also think it's very underrated in its humor. I think it's very funny. Like
the show is so funny.
It's so funny. Like I cite how horrible and like biting in that first season, some of BoJack's like insults are like, like where he tells like, he's like, that was, and I don't kid you lightly, worse than like 100 9/11s or something. Yeah. I was like, I love that as an insult. Like, I'm just like, this is the meanest thing. Like, I love like stuff like that. Like, I was like, this show's so like weirdly like edgy and dark, but like in a way that doesn't feel as edgy and dark as I think things like South Park and Family Guy are. And
it definitely feels like the stories kind of over, like it in terms of the fandom and reaction to the show, it does overshadow how funny it is. Like the show really is just jokes on jokes on jokes. Even the background gags, they're just constantly putting stuff in there. And it feels like people talk about like, oh, sad, depressed horse show. It's the saddest show ever. Like, it's also so funny.
Exactly. No, I've had the same like vibe of it because obviously the dark elements of it are its standout thing. So I understand why that is what people like associate the show with. Cause that always, unfortunately that always happens. Like with my show, it's the cursing and things like that. Like there's always like something that stands out as like kind of a thing that you're not used to or like not used to in this way. And so that's like what becomes like, it's the stereotype of the show. And so for BoJack, it's, oh, it's the sad, like therapist, like, wordy depression show. And I'm like, it's really not that. And even the characters that get into these like really deeper conversation, like I know there was one moment going around on Twitter where it was the episode Good Damage, where Diane is talking about how, like, there's like that moment she has with Princess Carolyn where she's talking about like, if I hadn't gone through that, like what good is what I went through if I can't do something with it. And it's one of those things where that's like one of the most beautiful moments in the entire show. Like that, I'm not even like the biggest Diane relate, you know, like she's not the character I relate to, but that particular episode I related to so intensely. And I think a lot of creators and writers probably do in a lot of ways. Yes. And I felt like it was so articulated, like in a way that was natural for the character but in isolation, everyone was like, wow, this therapy session from BoJack. And I was like, this is one of the last episodes. This is one of the culminating moments of one of the main characters.
Right.
You guys don't know shit. Fuck you. I think I even said something on Twitter. I was like, come on. Like, come on. So like, it's one of those things where I think that's like what it gained was like this, like, oh, it's, you know, that's like what people think the show is. But in reality, you see everything unfold. It does so much to like build up to moments like that, that are very, like, kind of like clarity moments. And so, you know, I just think it's brilliant. Like I can't gush more about the show. I think it's just done so well. There's only like a couple little criticisms I have, and funny enough, some of them are in this, or not in Ruthie, but they're like around Ruthie.
Sure.
There's like one storyline that I was like, felt like could be handled a little better, but like, even then it's not bad in any way, shape or form. And you can probably argue for it being perfect the way it is, you know. That's what's nice about the show.
Going back to what you said about that Good Damage clip, I also feel like especially towards the end of the show when they're doing these kind of culminating ideas for these characters, that's one in particular that I feel like is so core to almost every character's journey in the show. Like every character we learn about the different traumas and in their past that have shaped who they are. And obviously her specific journey is like, how do I use that to make it have been worth it? But every character is reacting and doing what they do in these shows because of the damage that they've accumulated over their life. And that's like, it's kind of like the big unifying thing for all the characters in the show.
Yeah. The point that out about it is kind of like to like willfully ignore like what the cartoon is trying to say, like not even trying to figure out like what does this mean thematically, just like seeing like 30 seconds and going like, I don't like how this cartoon is talking to me. This is, I don't think this is.
Let's talk Ruthie. So you chose the great episode, season 4, which is my favorite season of BoJack. Ruthie is a great episode. Why did you choose Ruthie?
So Ruthie is my favorite episode of the show. I remember when I first saw it, it's the hardest I've ever cried. And normally I just let the next episode play, but it was like the only one that I was like, I stopped it and kind of had a moment because I was like, that is one of the most like, and I, something about me, I like to cry and I like to tell stories that can get that emotional response. And I've been honored because it's been more so Helluva than has been, but Helluva is the show I think that gets more into this kind of BoJack territory just by nature of it being very, very flawed characters, a much more intimate story. It's about divorce and abuse and overcoming and having those things that defined you when you were younger cause problems in your later life and things like that. And that's obviously a huge aspect of BoJack is, you know, how damaged of a character BoJack is. And, you know, and obviously he kind of goes to levels that I don't even know if I can in good conscience take some of my characters, but like, it's one of those things where that's what's brilliant about it is that like, that's what's brilliant about the show is it's about specifically his growth out of being this kind of almost villainous person, you know, like not a villain, but like villainous levels of actions that are like almost unforgivable to some people, you know, or could be impossible to forgive or atone for. And I think that's what's brilliant about it because I'm like, it's so complicated and it's so like you know, and I think obviously later in the show, they have this incredible moment where like you understand BoJack all the way up to this point where you get a reveal of something that you didn't know that he did. Mm-hmm. And it makes you question whether or not you can like him, like all the other characters are reacting in real time. That's brilliant. So again, yeah. Show is brilliant. But with Ruthie, I have a lot of connection with Princess Carolyn as a character. She's not like the, like, this is me character, but she is like the character I heavily, like, I am a workaholic. I have a really hard time with work life balance. I am incredibly ambitious in a challenging world. You know, the adult animation world isn't really a women's game. So it's, you know, there's been challenge there. There's been expectancy. I'm also a woman on the internet. There's a whole fucking can of worms there. Like, there's a lot of overcoming when you're in this universe and in this industry. Sorry, my cat is again. Also, fun fact, she's also a Persian cat, which is also what my kitty is. She's a Persian cat.
Oh, amazing.
I love cats. I'm a cat person too, which also helps with the character. Oh my God, Pixel. Just, are you going to go behind?
Wait, what's
you
her name?
Go behind? Her name's Pixel.
Oh, Pixel. Okay. I thought she,
yes.
Okay. Cute. I heard yeah. Hazel, which is my cat growing up. I had a cat named Hazel.
Oh my gosh. Did you hear that? She like decided to climb over the stuff I have on the desk instead of going around. Anyway.
She heard us talking about it.
Yes.
Well,
I have three cats. I have Pixel, Honeybee, and Nugget. Those are my three cats.
Cute.
Sometimes cats. Nugget shows up, but I have not seen him today. I love Princess Carolyn as a character. I think she's just interesting. She's complex. She's obviously more in a different side of the industry than me. I think she's much more like oriented around like, you know, money and growth and things like that. Whereas I'm more of a creative person. So I'm more fixated, but it's a similar thing of like, I gotta tell my stories. I've got to do, you know, like you have this drive. So I've always loved her character and found a lot of her struggles incredibly relatable. And that episode, obviously centering around her struggles that are more in the personal side of her life and how the world kind of just like that one bad day that just everything goes wrong. I've had a number of those days in my life. And it really is just like this thing that like is overwhelming. And so there's the scene where she's crying in the car and I'm like, oh, that's like such a real moment. I've had those moments and I felt that level of pressure and heartbreak and just like feeling like everything's over. But the episode has this kind of, she's still, you know, moving forward and everything like that. But then the ultimate reveal at the end of the episode, like literally, like, I think that was the hardest I've ever been hit by an ending in BoJack. Yeah. Like, because even some of the darker things that happened later, like I don't think hit me as much as that one did, just because we're so invested in this horrible day and there's like this tiny little glimmer of hope in it. And then we get it just ripped away from us. And yeah, I just had to stop and like digest it when I first saw it. And it's still the episode that gets me, like, especially if I have the show on the background, it doesn't hit me as hard. But like when I am watching the show, every single time I cry, like I just cannot not have that moment
totally,
you know, hit.
It's such a quintessential PC episode. Who is she's also, I think she's my favorite character as well. Early in the show, we had this episode, Say Anything, that was like the first PC episode where she has a similarly difficult day where everything starts to go wrong. Like she loses a huge client. BoJack fires her to work with her rival because he wants to date her and gets her hopes up. And like everything is going wrong. She loses her big project to her rival. And then that episode is kind of about everything going wrong, her picking herself up and saying, you got to get your shit together. And then actually like coming out on top at the end, even though it still has like kind of this gut punch moment at the end where all of her hard work is kind of undermined, but
yeah, it's kind of for nothing.
Right. But this one, it does that same thing without any of the, like we don't get to see until later in the show, her build herself back up. Like this is everything PC has built up to this point in the show comes crumbling down in one episode. And it like challenges. I think what was really interesting to me about it is that every single thing that goes wrong, it challenges different. It challenges her past, her present, and her future. Where like learning that her necklace that she has all this personal meeting to from her past and her history is not real. It's a fake story that her mom told her. And then to learn that her partner, Judah, lied to her about something really important in their business. Everything she believes about her current professional situation, a lie. And then to lose her kid and break up with Ralph, everything about her perceived future, gone. Like, it is, it could not be so more thoroughly devastating.
No, it's insane, like, how, like, well-crafted also the bad day, you know, like, just, everything being lost at once is so, it's just devastating. And then, on top of that, this coping mechanism that we're revealed to as the audience, it's just such a well-crafted idea. Like, I can't get it, because obviously the show is full of episodes like that, that are these kind of amazing setups for a really impactful story. But it's just so that this one in particular, to me, just like that even just like whoever, like whether it was Raphael or whoever came up with that framing device of like, this is what the gut punch of the episode's going to be. And it's going to be great. And it's like, I love that about it. Yeah, for sure.
That's what I think is like really great about this one. And it's kind of a testament to the cartoon in general, because like both of you, like I've seen the cartoon like over maybe like 5 times. And I put this on and knew exactly where it was going to go. And it still punched me at the end. when she reveals the coping mechanism to BoJack, like just the way that they frame it, the way that the shot is composed, like it's like, even because, you know, it's like simple animation, but the show is beautiful. Yeah. Like it's always been like really pretty, and it's been strategic with like blocking and like, you know, like sequences and stuff like that. And that's just another one of those. Even like her earlier, like her argument with Judah, like the lighting in that scene, and like it's just, you can tell, like it's just bad vibes, like off the walk in. You know what I mean? It's a really pretty show.
The Judah scene is so heartbreaking.
It is.
It's so like, it's something that I also like about the show, because I'm a very, obviously my artistic style is the opposite of BoJack. Like that's the one thing that BoJack did not influence in any way was the art style. But it is amazing to me, because normally I am kind of personally adverse to styles like BoJack that are stiffer and a little bit less expressive.
Yeah.
And I don't know, I think it's just the way the story is crafted. It kind of needs to be a little, like, I feel like if it was too animated, in some ways, some of these stories wouldn't hit as hard, because it is such a like dry kind of, the dialogue's very dry. There isn't a lot of background music. There isn't, you know, like all these things that you kind of don't think about when you're watching it. But I've gone back and watched it kind of with some of these things in mind. And I'm like, there's not a lot of like score in this show. There's not a lot of like things going on. Like, it's really just kind of realistic. It's very like, this is kind of the sounds that would be in this scene. This is kind of like how dry it would feel. These are kind of how long the conversations would go, like normally. Like, I think I'm very attracted to things that are written very naturally and feel like they're real conversations that people could have. And I think the show is just comprised of that. And so I think that's something that I think makes it beautiful, is that it's so simple and so kind of real, that the style and everything and the characters not being as expressive as I think you'd see in other cartoons is kind of what helps it in a way.
It almost feels like that's an important juxtaposition, because like the world feels like it should be so cartoony. It's all animal people, you know, like it's a very silly world, but the story and characters are obviously so grounded and realistic that it almost feels like if the animation was this bigger, sillier, if there was like squash and stretch type of stuff, if you had really silly expressions, it would almost undermine like the tone.
You know what's so funny about that, though, is that like a couple years later, Toucan Birdie would do that.
Not to the exact
same degree, but like they, you know, it's the same design, and it's like so silly. I've said that it took me like 3 times to like get into it because it was so loud. But like once I finally sat down, I loved
that's
it.
That's one that I left off my list. I love that show too. That show and Harley Quinn. I have a similar energy. Harley Quinn it's really fun. That one came out very similar to like around the time of Has-Been. And like, I'd always wanted to do something because I adore the Batman Rogues Gallery. They were a huge influence on me and on Has-Been. And so seeing that show come out, I was like, this is just what I would have done if I was ever in charge of these characters. It's so great. So that show is awesome. And obviously it's newer, and I think that's why it slipped my mind. But that one right. and Tuca and Birdie, coming from a little bit more of a female perspective, I think also like there is a really fun splash of that. And I think that's what's nice is like Has-Been and those shows like have this more female center around it with the adult humor, which I think makes it really, really fun. But yeah, Tuca and Birdie is one that was able to balance. I think it's significantly less dark than BoJack and less gritty and less real, but it deals with things in a very like it, when it wants to get deep, it gets very deep.
Yeah. It has its really cool. heavy moments, but that is also one of my favorites. I really wish they had gotten another season. I know they didn't quite end it where they wanted to. Well, maybe one day, but one day
it feels like one that could, you know, have a chance.
And I'm just also grateful that it got those other two seasons after Netflix canceled it. Like, that's a miracle in itself.
Yeah.
And season two is like one of my favorite seasons of television ever. Like, I love Tuca and Birdie season two. The episode Night Friends is like, I adore it. The one she's walking that's around at night. Oh my God. It's so
that's
good.
The one.
So good. Yeah.
Oh, what a good show. Okay. So Ruthie. This season is so good. It's so crazy to point out how many, like, this season has Old Sugarman Place, which is my favorite episode. It has Stupid Piece of Shit, which is like many people's favorite episode. It's got Ruthie, which is many people's favorite episode. And it's got Time's Arrow, which is like those are four all time BoJack episodes. And they're all in this one season. It just really feels like they were like really firing on all cylinders in this season.
That season really had, it feels like everything was figured out in that season. I think the only, I could be wrong, because there's one plot line that I personally am not like the biggest, it's not bad, but I'm not the biggest fan of, so I get mixed up on which season it happens in. Is Peanut Butter running for governor in that season? That's the only plot line that I'm kind of like, that happens too.
That is probably one of the most overtly cartoony plot lines in the show.
It's so silly.
Like the ski race in the first episode. The ski race for the governor. Yes. It is pretty funny. I mean, it is definitely.
It's really funny.
Different. Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's just because so much other stuff that's really good is happening that one.
Sure, yeah.
It is the break. It's the reprise. But that's also why I kind of forget. Like, I'm like, that is also happening at the same time. Yeah. I remember that. Yeah,
totally. Do you have any other like favorite things about this episode? Favorite scenes that you want to talk about before
I don't know, like the whole thing, it's kind of hard to pinpoint seeing. I know I really love personally, there's the moment where she sees Charlie again at the jeweler's and he's like, I'm so proud of you. And she's like, your approval means nothing to me. That's such a like real moment. Like I especially like being any kind of hard working woman where you see someone else just fail upwards and then they say anything to you. Yeah. It's just like, I don't give a shit.
That
moment
character.
I really like. I think it's such a good. Yeah. And he's also just a really funny character. Like, I love that character.
And is voiced by Raphael Bob-Axberg doing the voice of Charlie Witherspoon. Yes.
I was going to ask.
I didn't know that. I thought it was, I thought it was, the other actor.
Sure.
Adam Conover, is that his name? I thought it was him.
Adam Conover,
he's all
married,
over the show.
Yeah, and he's married to Lisa Hannawalt, who created Tuca and Birdie. Yeah.
That makes sense. Yeah, makes a lot of sense.
Nope, it's Raphael. Yeah, it's Raphael Bob-Axberg doing the voice of Charlie Witherspoon.
That's such a funny voice.
I just pulled up the wiki and I was laughing because the two images they have for him are marked intern and CEO. His two models.
His two roles.
That's pretty funny.
Just the failing upwards. Very high.
Amazing.
That's awesome.
I like that he brought the Utah Jazz in and he tries to make them agents.
The Lions, like, they're terrible agents, but they're getting better.
They're getting better.
Oh, how good.
That's so good.
Man. cool. I did want to bring this up. I mean, obviously with the musical and Broadway connections, Vanessa Gecko is played by Kristen Chenoweth. I didn't realize that till recently. Yeah.
I knew the second she talked. I was like, that's Kristen. Right there. She's got a very, very iconic voice.
Tariq and I were also laughing because obviously you cast Stephanie Beatriz in Has Been, mm-hmm. Who's great. But then her whole story, she's got a whole subplot in season 5 where her character wants to be singing on Broadway. That was really fun connection there.
Yeah. You know, it's funny because I was familiar with Stephanie before, but for some reason I didn't make that connect until much later that I was like, that's her. That's one of my personal, I really like season 5. So that one is really like a big season to me. And the other funny thing about that episode that I think is really, really I just couldn't stop joking about was that, you know, her whole thing is that she was inspired by a musical about corn. And that's the whole thing. There is, in fact, a Broadway musical about corn. It's closed now, but I saw it a number of times. It was a great show.
It was good.
But it was, in fact, about corn. Yeah. Oh, it was. It was. The show was called Shucked. An adult comedy. It was adorable. I actually am in love with the show. It felt like a 90s movie that had never existed because it's about a small town that like their biggest export is corn, but like the characters are so simple and silly. And like one of the big songs and the big jokes is that the corn's dying. So one of the girls from the town is like, I'm going to go find someone who can help save our corn. And she leaves and she goes to Tampa, Florida. And she thinks that that means that she's like a woman of the world. There's a whole song where she's like, I'm a woman of the world. Cause she went to Tampa, Florida. It's the funny, amazing. Like, it's so cute. It's adult, but it is like in that like, yeah, like old 90s movie kind of adult, like almost Beetlejuice where it's like,
seen it.
It's adult. It's a delight. The good news is that it's getting a movie adaptation. So I'm like, gosh, like that's going to be. Yeah. So hopefully they keep the charm of the show because the show was so fucking charming. And like Alex Newell was in it playing the main like booze maker of the town. And like it's like, you know, she's incredible. So like the powerhouse song from her. It's just, it's great. It was a great show. But the funny thing about it to me was I was like, oh my God, there really is a fucking Broadway show about corn. BoJack predicted. So BoJack predicted. Shucks. Yes.
And you know what they have? And it's so funny because it feels like they put out these ideas that feel so silly and then they happen and are huge hits. And like the other one that's so funny in BoJack, is the one where it's a PB Livin' scene where they're talking to where PB and Todd are talking to their lawyer and he's mad at them because they paid for the rights to the game Tag to a child and they hold up a poster for a movie called Tag and then they made the Tag
movie. There was a movie called Tag.
And even more insane, the lawyer is voiced by Jake Johnson, who is in Tag. Who is the star of Tag.
He is. He's one of the stars. I've seen That's Tag perfect. Like twice. That movie is sick. I love that shit. That shit is great.
I need to see it. It kind of looked really funny. Like I was like, this kind of looks great. I never ended up seeing it, but
it's really funny and surprisingly sincere. It's like super sincere.
That's awesome. I love when things are surprisingly sincere.
Oh man, well, this was so much fun. Thank you so much for coming on. Like we've been waiting to talk about BoJack for so long, and so like to be able to talk to you about it, and you're obviously so passionate about the show, as passionate as we are about BoJack. Perfect.
I love it. No, I don't get to talk about it that much because especially in my my circle of friends, I'm like the only major person who likes it. Like I turned it on to my co-writer Adam Nalen, and so now I can talk about it with him because he took a lot away from it that was different from me, and so we've had like some really deep conversations about it because like he likes certain characters more than me. He doesn't he hates certain characters that I like. You know what I mean? Like it's always interesting, but there aren't that many people who like know the show as intimately and like want to talk about it. So it's like, it was great to get to talk about it. I love the show. Much love to everyone who made it possible.
Yeah,
and much love to the brilliant writers on that show. And yeah, thank you so much. This has been great.
Yeah. I was laughing at you saying that, you would kind of think twice about taking some of the Helluva characters to places that they would even take BoJack characters is like the only place more depraved than hell is Hollywood.
Literally, because like for me, it's like it's less like that I wouldn't be willing, because there are some, I mean, obviously, especially in Has-Been, people have seen like some of the villains go pretty hard, but they're villains, right?
Right.
But like a character like Blitz, there's just certain like lines. I'm like, if I took Blitz as far down this road as BoJack, I don't think he could come back. Right. I don't think his like ability would survive, especially since like part of Helluva's journey is wounded people that find solace in each other. So it's a little bit more at the heart of it's a romance. I feel like it's pretty obvious by now to people watch the show that the main heart of the show is Blitz and Stolas's relationship,
right?
And every other character and their relationship to Blitz is like the what the show's about. Like that's why it's funny too, because I've seen the comment where people are like, why don't they go on missions? The show's called Hell of a Boss. And I'm like, well, it's about the hell of a boss.
Right.
It's not called
it's about the boss.
It's not called IMP. The show's called Hell of a Boss,
it's about
not
the
IMP.
Boss.
So yeah, it's about him. It's about his relationships, him, his journey to make the business, all those things. So to me, I'm like, that's like the heart of it. It's like him finding these relationships with other people. Whereas BoJack is a show about one flawed person and almost like how his trauma and his decisions cause the hurt around him, you know, and like how far that can go. But it's also got this hopeful ending of like, but you can always do better, which I obviously the theme of redemption matters a lot to me. That's what Has-Been's about. And I think that was another aspect of the show that I loved, because as somebody who, you know, you feel like when you've made a mistake that you can never make up for it and everything like that. And what I love about BoJack is it's a character who makes the worst like mistakes that are debatably unforgivable.
Right.
But it's also showing that with enough like care and love and support, even those people can at least start a journey to try to make up for it or better themselves or something. You know what I mean? Like I like that the end of the show is that it, no matter how broken and messed up a person is, you don't owe them forgiveness, but we should at least hope that they will try to do better, you know?
Exactly. And I feel like that's something that people don't give. Obviously a lot of fans of the show pick up on that, but it does feel like a lot will watch it and just be like, well, that was a show about a bad guy. But the whole idea is that even if true redemption and being forgiven, and like, even if there's nothing in it for him, he can like in the long run, it's, you know, in terms of like getting back to where he was before, there's always it's always good to just try and be better and better yourself. It's never too late, even if you're so far gone, to just like try. And so that's, I think the ending of the show, as sad as it is, like that is, it's really optimistic, even though I'm like sobbing at Mr. Blue every time that scene plays. I think it's like an interestingly optimistic show.
And I think they knock you down purposefully to show you that it's out, because the view from halfway down right before, it like knocks you to like the lowest point. It was like, oh, well, he's just fucking dead. It's over. Like, you know what I mean?
And like, you're like, oh my God, that's up. Where it ends? Like,
right.
Yeah.
And then it's not.
Right. It lifts you back up and like tells you like, look, he's not dead, but you know, he's still gonna try. He's still gonna try to make things happen. Like, and that's just what life is at a certain point.
Exactly. Yeah, which is great. I love that.
Amazing. Well, this was so much fun. Thank you so much for coming on with us. This was great. We would love to, I mean, honestly, we're doing this new format, and we're gonna be having a lot of guests on. But if at any point in the future you want to come back and talk more BoJack or talk other shows, we're like, we just
absolutely
love geeking out about cartoons. So
yeah.
It's just so great.
I love it. No, this is great. I love the focus on adult animation specifically too, because I feel like, you know, I don't know, it's taken for granted and not a lot of people focus on kind of like how unique it can be and how fun. So yeah, like I love it. I'm very honored to come on and talk about BoJack.
Cool. Well, thank you so much. This was so much fun. Obviously everyone should watch Has-Been on Amazon Prime, Helluva on YouTube. Anything else you want to plug? This won't come out for a couple months, but you know, anything you want to point people to?
Honestly, no, that's probably it. I mean, in a couple months, like maybe we'll have more hell of a to look forward to in the the near-ish future. We're hoping to get the second half of season two out this year by like at least by the end of the year, have every the last I think 5 episodes are out. So hopefully. But either way, like I'm so excited. Obviously we're working hard on season two of Has-Been, and I can't wait for people to see that. And yeah, both shows are currently available in different places. Has-Been on Prime and Hell-Of on YouTube. And yeah, thank you guys so much.
Amazing. Thank you so much for joining us. Yeah, now I got to do my ending spiel. Whenever we have guests, I'm like, hey, now here's my ending spiel. How do I do this? I say, and with that, I want to thank Carrie Feek for our artwork. I want to thank Jake Neutron for our theme song. I want to thank Michael Yunez for producing and editing the podcast. I want to thank Tariq for co-hosting this show with me whenever we feel like making it. I want to thank you, Viv, for coming on and joining us. We need to thank our patrons, the cursed ones, and our audience in general for making it possible for us to make this show. We love you and we appreciate you, but also, thank you very much. Good night.
Yeah, bye.